So we're going to be recording the podcast. So welcome, everyone. And when you all have questions for our speakers, we'll repeat the questions so that the podcast picks it up. So please help me welcome Omar Barsena from KMD, Lizbeth Barsena from Gary Partners, as well as Paul Locke from Gary Partners. And thank you so much. We'll just get started. If you have questions throughout, just raise your hand. We'll call on you. So just the first thing is describe what you each do, and in terms of schooling, what do you recommend for your various careers?
Hi, I'm Lizbeth. Thank you for inviting me and having me here. What I do, and it changes based on where the phase of the project is, but right now I'm drawing. I'm on the computer, and I draw details of, you know, the exterior or the foundation or the roof. So various elements of the building I draw into 2D. And we're actually working on a program that draws 3D and 2D at the same time. So everything you draw turns into a 3D element. And other things that I do on a day-to-day basis is, you know, it's kind of the email, answering emails or responding to emails or responding to, you know, questions from around the team or meeting with the team. And that's just kind of just the phase that we're in right now, which is documenting and kind of understanding the problems that the project has and just kind of a documentation phase. In terms of schooling, I can tell you what I did. I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo Polytechnic, and it's basically it's a polytechnic school, so you have to kind of declare yourself when you graduate. You declare the major you want to get into. And I got really good advice from a high school counselor who I told him I was interested in doing architecture or I was interested in art, science, and something, and he kind of pushed me towards the architecture profession, and he recommended that I volunteer over the summer with a local architect, and he gave me their contact information, and I think that was kind of a good segue into, you know, the profession. And then once I got into school, it's Cal Poly is an accredited school, so you just go through the 5 years or 6 years and you can graduate and start working. That was kind of the path that I took, and there's different paths that a lot of people take, but that's my kind of history on that. Guess I can pass it on to the next person. Yeah.
You're down, bro.
Okay. Hi, my name is Omar. I also went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and my path was a little different. I declared my major first as landscape architecture, then I switched to construction management, and then I switched into architecture after flirting with graphic design, modern languages and literature, and graphic communications. I ended up in architecture by default through the various courses that I took, and I mean, I love my education. It's great, and all three of us are from Cal Poly, so you know. So yeah, as Lizbeth mentioned, accredited, which is good. So if you're looking to go to school, you look for an accredited, preferably public, I would say, because it's cheaper, school. And what I do day to day is mainly crisis management. I'm in charge of a team. We're currently working in a hospital in Hollywood. It's a hospital expansion. And I'm orchestrating all of the work that happens, you know, all the employees, everyone's in charge of a particular task, you know, from foundations to waterproofing to what they call medical planning, which is the furniture inside the hospital, the equipment. There's, you know, anything you can imagine that goes in a building, lighting, carpet, wall coverings, clocks, just anything. And so I need to make sure that everything keeps running every day. And it's a lot of work. Next.
Hi, I'm Paul. I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo with these two. That's where we met, actually, and just randomly bumped into each other back in Los Angeles. When I was younger, I guess I can go back even before Cal Poly San Luis, for some reason, I promised to build my mother a house when I was like a little kid, probably, you know, going to grade school. And for some reason, I just stuck with it, and that's how I became an architect. So I didn't know what that actually meant when I was going through school, middle school, high school. There were some drafting classes and probably computer classes that I probably should have taken that were more geared towards art and architecture. But instead, I focused on like math and physics. I took a music class for, I don't know, 8 years, you know, play an instrument. Didn't really get into art. I wish I did. Probably learned how to draw a little better. When I was looking for colleges, I agree with Omar. Cal Poly is a state school. It was fairly inexpensive as compared to some of the, you know, schools on the East Coast or you know, some of the private schools for architecture. But Cal Poly San Luis Obispo was ranked top in the nation, and you know, going through the college career guides of where to go to, based on the discipline, that seemed like a pretty good choice. So that was one of my top places to apply. Applied a couple of schools as backups, but I was able to get into Cal Poly, luckily, and had a great experience there. So like Lizbeth said, you have to declare what your major was. It was architecture. In the beginning, you kind of take general, you know, math courses and, you know, general education. But because it was a polytechnic school, the math background that I had in high school actually helped out a lot, because we had to take a lot of math and a lot of physics, almost too much math and physics, if you ask me. We don't need to know about imaginary numbers in architecture, but we studied them. But it was still really good. It was problem solving. Like Omar was saying, it's a lot of crisis management is what we do in our job, and, you know, solving other people's problems as well as our own. So at a school, I stayed in San Luis Obispo, worked a bit, and then ended up teaching at the college for one semester. I was really excited to, but I always thought I wanted to go teach. And particularly if you're a teacher in some of the state schools, it's very helpful if you have a master's degree. So I applied to a master's program down in LA at UCLA, another state school. It was very affordable. It was great for me. I was able to do it on my own. Other schools were up into the $40,000 a year. UCLA was more in the range of, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 when I went. And because I went to an accredited school, accredited versus non-accredited just means how many years you stay in college, and the California Architecture, like, Licensing Board deems it as extra experience. So if it's an accredited school, it counts as all of experience for you towards architecture. If it's unaccredited, it's kind of counted as a some education, some experience, but not as much as an accredited school. So going to get my master's, I only had to be there for 1 year since I had to get went to an accredited undergraduate. If I went to an unaccredited undergraduate, I would have to go for 3 years. So there's a difference there. So I graduated 10 years ago with my master's, and then ended up working in LA and stayed here, and ended up working with Lizbeth. And then bumped into these guys downtown, and that's why we're here. Day to day, right now we're working on a project. You know, architecture has different phases, from, you know, meeting a client for the first time to giving them a concept design of what a building looks like, to developing that into actually making it, like what Lizbeth's doing now, into drawings of a detail of, you know, how the floor meets the wall, or how carpets, you know, end at a column, or how steps work. It's, you know, it's very detailed and entailing. And I'm more right now in our phase. We just finished doing that, and we're submitting our drawings to the city of New York. Actually, we're working on a project in New York for approval. So they have to check and make sure that it meets all the codes. No one's going to die or get hurt. And kind of more now in Omar's area, not necessarily for a team in our office, but we're now working with people who build the project to make sure that they understand what we drew and what we're saying, and we check all their work, and we work with them. It's very collaborative to try to get this project built kind of the way we envisioned it. So once again, problem solving, crisis management, and getting into the details. It's fun.
Thank you. I'm going to jump around a little. You had talked about internships or volunteerships, perhaps, at where you work currently and in the career in general. Do you know, are there a lot of internships for, say, high school students versus college students versus people already out of school?
Yes, our office actually does take in a handful of interns every summer. I think they're all either in school already in some architecture school. I was lucky when I grew up. I was just fresh out of high school, so I just, you know, knocked. It was a small town, so, you know, you could just walk up to the architect, and they got, you know, I got work there for, you know, a small amount of money. But Yeah, I mean, I'm imagining that a lot of offices do provide internships and they're paid internships, so it's worth asking and talking. And I think architects are willing to talk and meet new people, and they love talking about their profession and their career and everything about it. So if you just kind of walk up to them or email them, they'll I'm sure they'll have something they could have you help on for, you know, be a part of the office and experience it. So.
Well, my experience was different. My first internship was at the firm, or actually my only internship is the firm that I am at now. So the people that mentored me, I am now working with, 14, 15 years later? Is that, 14, 15 years later. So yeah, the people that taught me architecture are the ones that I'm working with collaborative now every day. I do think that opportunities for interns are only open to university students, not so much high school. I think that has to do with the training. So you're training to be an architect, and so they welcome you. And we do need a lot of clerical work, I guess that's what I would call it. And you need to learn that in the beginning. You know, like in the construction, there's a lot of paperwork. And the people that are trying to solve the problem need somebody to produce, you know, and manage the paperwork. So I would say hang in there. You need to learn everything from the beginning, from back in the days running a fax machine, not so much anymore, but... That's where you start. You start with helping somebody, and it might seem like an eternity before you get to do anything exciting, but eventually you do.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, my first internship was actually through the college that we went to, had a program where for a couple months they hooked you up with a firm, an architecture firm, to work with them. And, you know, it was through the school. So not necessarily me going out and knocking on doors and trying to find a job or, someone to help. But I agree with Omar. It's more like college. Like if you're in community college, regular college, undergraduate, graduate school is where internships come from, typically during the summertime. I actually, in my first internship, I quit after a couple days. I didn't think it was a right fit, even though it was set up by the school. I was very particular, and I didn't want to, for lack of a better term, waste my time. Like, I wanted to learn something that was great. I didn't expect to be, designing a house or a concert hall on the first day. There is a lot of clerical work. There is a lot of learning how to, work in an architecture firm and work with people. But I would say that if you are in a position of an internship and you don't necessarily feel that it's the right fit, there's a lot of different type of architects out there and a lot of different firms. So finding that right fit's a good idea. And then once you find that, finishing that out. Because right now in our office, we don't necessarily take a lot of interns. A lot of interns are actually through schools that we've either built or programs that we work with one-on-one. So we'll kind of like as a nod to them, we will take on students from that school or that program and allow them to be in our office. But if you like where that internship is and it's teaching you something well or good and you like the people there, I would apply the following year, because in our office we've actually hired a few of our interns that have come back to our office for maybe, 1 or 2 years in a row, and they do a really good job. And when they come out of school and it's time to apply for a job or, another internship or something, if you do good and we like you, we typically hire you and kind of keep you in the fold. It's a lot about teaching. Like, you teach you how our office designs or how that office works or who's who. And once you get to understand that, that's a very powerful thing in our office, in an office.
Thank you. I'm going to jump around the questions a little bit. How comfortable does one need to be with technology, and what kind of classes should, young adults and adults be taking if they hope to do what you're doing? And what platform?
The platforms, comfortable with technology. I guess you have to be pretty comfortable. I think Cal Poly did a really good job in providing classes where you learn AutoCAD, which is a 2D drawing tool, and that was back in the day, and there was other programs that were coming up, but now there's so many different new programs, and depending on the office, which programs they use, you might find yourself that there's programs that you've never used that much, and you're just gonna have to learn, and you have to be somewhat comfortable. And for me, I kind of fell into the comfort of the 3D modeling when I first started where I'm at now. I had come previously from an office that did a lot of custom houses, and so we did a lot of 2D work, and a lot of, sometimes I did renderings and, you know, Prismacolors and, you know, doing things by hand. And then just starting at Gary's office, it was, there was a lot of physical models, but then when you went from the physical model to the 3D world, there was this new program, which Frank Gehry is very well known for kind of pioneering this kind of 3D modeling tool. And I took that kind of a interest in it. You know, I learned a little bit of 3D modeling in school and in the other office. But the program itself became kind of the, it's the tool that Frank uses for building a lot of his complex, you know, the Disney Concert Hall and other buildings with the complex geometry. And I started to learn it very well to a point where I just enjoyed it a lot. And I was able to also work with Gehry Technologies, which is kind of the 3D modeling aspect of his office. Now there's a new program, which is kind of more common in a lot of offices. It's Autodesk Revit. And in a way, like, because I was in the 3D aspect of our office with Gehry Technologies, and now with Revit being kind of the common program throughout all of the offices, in a way, you're almost, once you kind of get comfortable with one tool, you kind of learn that comfort, and you pick up things, and as things evolve, because programs are going to keep evolving and you're just going to keep learning, and it's not like you need to apply for a job and know it. I think you shouldn't be intimidated if somebody says, oh, you don't know how to do this very well. You should just be like, you know, I've dabbled in it, but, you know, everybody is kind of on that learning curve because there's so many new things out there. So I wouldn't feel intimidated by all of the new technologies. I would just kind of say, you know, you can do it, and you'll just like willing to learn. So I guess that's kind of like my spiel on the the 3D world.
So I'm holding the mic still. I agree with Elizabeth. Just, you kind of just have to dabble or know the general concepts of the programs, because actually, like in our office, if you come and you're a new hire or an intern, there's actually a couple week long training course in those programs. So they teach you how to use them a little bit, but also how the office uses them, because each office uses everything a little bit different. So it's good. So like the 3D program that Elizabeth and I use in our work, the one that Frank Gehry kind of developed, Gehry Technologies, it was first used to design, you know, airplanes, and, you know, the computer program then developed to design buildings or fun little sculptures. And now it's, you know, very powerful to design buildings. And no one knew how to use that. Like, it didn't exist outside of that office, pretty much. So when we both got there, Elizabeth actually learned it a lot better than I did. I'm still kind of a novice at it. You know, the office trains you and gives you plenty of opportunity to kind of learn by doing. That's the motto of Cal Poly. Bad motto, but it makes sense. So to add on, you know, we do use AutoCAD a lot. It's a 2D drawing program for drafting. We use that Digital Projects program. Right now in our office too, we're using a lot of a 3D modeling program called Rhino, Rhino 3D. It's pretty good. It's really powerful. You can do some animation, some automation on it, but it's a very good program. To get started, I would say I've never used it, but, and I know in the office that I worked at before, they started using a program called SketchUp. So that's kind of like a good introduction into kind of the concepts of how 3D modeling works, and, you know, can help you kind of advance later on into more advanced programs. Using Photoshop is helpful for us. Using Excel, Word, Outlook, you know, email even, those type of programs, that, you know, kind of everything, well-rounded idea of using all those types of, you know, even office mundane programs.
What was the name of the 2D to 3D program that you mentioned?
Her question was, what was the name of the 2D to 3D program that we use? It's the Revit Autodesk from Autodesk, yeah.
Okay, in terms of technology, I would say be comfortable with the basics. That means the pencil, the pen, and the paper. in terms of your basic technology, and then moving on to software, yeah, be open, because later on, as you climb the ladder at work, you're gonna end up using managerial software if you choose that path, like Microsoft Project or even Excel. You know, once you become a manager, it's really important that you know how to use Excel well or all the tricks in Word. Otherwise, you're just gonna, you know, drown. Yeah, you're gonna drown in the demands of your job.
Thank you so much. And I would just like to plug a couple of our databases. We have like Lynda, and we have different databases where you can learn Excel and, you know, some tools such as that. So definitely always ask us if you're looking to learn about these things.
I will go ahead and say that our office actually has links to Lynda in our office. So that's actually how I learned to use the modeling tool Revit right now. So it's Lynda's good, and they had really good tutorials. It was very, very good for me to learn that. And I guess we can also, I forgot to mention, even the more fun technology. I mean, you were talking about the pen and pencil, but integrated with the other ones, like the 3D printing software. So we get to use a lot of like physical tools that kind of help us make our buildings. Like the mill, the CNC mill, which they use actually to make buildings. We use to make models a lot. In our office, we use a lot of physical models. So technology doesn't necessarily just mean a computer. It means, you know, physically getting with a piece of machinery and kind of, you know, getting comfortable with a bandsaw, getting comfortable with a drill, getting comfortable with a 3D printer. So it's going on the same lines of more technology.
Sounds great. Sounds fun. Any questions from the audience so far? Anyone want to ask anything as we're going? Okay, so we will keep going. I'm going to still jump around. Can you talk a little bit about diversity and diverse backgrounds? And I noticed your flyer is bilingual, which is wonderful to see. Is there a lot of diversity in your career that you see?
I think it's, in the beginning, it didn't feel very diverse, but I think as the years pass, the younger generation, there has been a lot more diversity. I feel like at Cal Poly, there weren't that many Mexicans and Mexican or Mexican Americans, at least in architecture. The Hispanics that I met at Cal Poly were interested in architectural engineering, and Cal Poly has a great, you know, they have this big umbrella of education at Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and I'm assuming Pomona has the same similar aspects where they have the College of Environmental Design, which includes architectural engineering, construction management, landscape architecture. Is there another one? There's like a business aspect one?
I think the business aspect just got added.
Did get added to it. And a lot of the Hispanics that I met were kind of either leaning towards engineering or architectural engineering. And in a way, to them, they felt that because it paid better when you graduated, in a way it's true, you know, as a recent grad from any kind of engineering degree, you do get paid better as an architect versus an architect, because the architecture profession, a lot of your pay increase happens as you gain experience. School teaches you a certain amount to a certain extent. You know, you learn to be creative, you learn to understand the art, you learn to understand the buildings, you know, the history, and you learn to have a passion and a sense for it. And you learn to, in to some degree, which is why Cal Poly is really great, because you learn by doing, you learn to understand the materials and in some of the aspects of construction. But when you get out to the profession, you in the real world, and every different office is very different, it's not you. There's still a lot more you're learning. You have to learn. There's still a lot more. So it's kind of the pay increase happens through the years as you gain more experience, and as you know go from office to office. Question? Yeah.
What is the difference between an architecture degree and an architectural engineering?
The difference, well, I know the architectural engineering program is a lot more engineering and a lot more calculations and structural loads, and I'm not exactly sure where they end up after they graduate. I haven't followed up. I don't know, do you guys know anyone who, they probably become engineers to some degree?
Yeah, I think they become structural engineers. So architects are more of, you know, how do I put it? It's more like if you're doing a movie, like the architects are more like the directors. They have the big vision, they have the design, they have the idea for the movie, and then they work with the person who films and the production designer and the other areas. A structural engineer, who is typically what happens if you study architectural engineering, is someone who really likes math a lot and physics. And basically we give them a building like the Disney Concert Hall or a hospital or a house and say, can you please help us make sure that this thing doesn't fall down in an earthquake? Can you tell us, you know, how big this column has to be, or what type of nails do we have to use, or how much concrete we need to kind of put on the ground as a foundation for the building. And they run the calculations, they run it through computer programs and do the math, and they come back and say, this is what you need. As architects, we kind of have to have a little bit of an understanding of what goes into that, a little bit of the math, so we can check their work or ask where, and a lot of cases, how to change it or make it different in order to work with our design. And then we challenge them and they challenge us back, and that's kind of how the collaboration process works.
Can I plug back into the diversity question? Because I know I kind of strayed on the whole, like, because there is an economic factor, because I know, at least growing up with my family, they're like, get a good job, you know, be like, my sister wanted to be a doctor, my brother's an engineer, and like, architecture is like, you know, everybody's worried about you succeeding, you know, paying the bills, etc. But once you're in school, it like, you almost forget where you come from to some degree. Like, you don't, at least for me, I didn't like go in there like, oh, I'm this like, I'm looking for diversity. When you go to at least architecture school, it's about the architecture, it's about the art, it's about the experience, it's about, you know, walking outside and seeing buildings and, you know, understanding urbanism. And it's, you kind of become, you know, a visionary of, you know, what it is you want to make your profession. You know, it's not so much of like, am I the only Mexican or woman? You know, our office has a great diversity. You know, there's a lot of women, there's, you know, a lot of Latinos, Hispanics, people from other countries. So it is what you make it. So regardless of where you come from, I mean, that's my diversity perspective.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think diversity is your job. So whatever office you work in, the office is going to be as diverse as the city you're in. So my office has, you know, all kinds of people with all kinds of labels given or, you know, self-declared. If you go to, you know, in the middle of, I don't know, some place without diversity, of course, your office is going to be not diverse. So what I'm leading to, though, that diversity is your job, I would say, don't go to school in the same place that you grew up in. Go somewhere else, because that makes you diverse. You might think you're diverse, but you're probably not. So you're as diverse as the things that you absorb. So go see another country, another city, another culture, learn another language, and study abroad, go places. So if you're from Pomona, don't go to Cal Poly Pomona, basically, is what I'm saying. Go elsewhere. It'll really help.
Yeah. More on that? Jeez. I mean, yeah, even with school, let's say, you know, growing up for Cal Poly, when we went, it was a lot of white guys going to architecture school. Like, maybe a class would have, you know, a couple women in it, a couple of people of color or with different backgrounds. But after 6 years, 7 years after I started teaching there, the class that I taught actually had like 75% women and, you know, 25% men. I don't know if it was because that's how the class went out, but there was actually a lot more just diversity just in gender, which was really nice to see. And even in our office now, you know, when I first started, there were less women. There were still women, you know, there were still people of color. There was a little diversity, but even as the years went by, I've been there for 10 years. Now, as like Elizabeth was saying, there's a lot more Latinos. There's a lot more people from other countries. And it is very important to us, you know, our field, to get other, you know, expectations of understandings of other cultures, how things work. And it really influences design and how we work and how we, you know, make space. So, you know, these guys said it a lot. Yeah, go experience other cultures. Take your culture into the job. Don't think that you have to necessarily assimilate to the, you know, the views in the offices that you are, or even your project manager or your boss. You know, what you have, at least in the field of architecture and probably most other fields, it's very important to express that opinion and express who you are, because it can only help the situation, or maybe only help. It helps the situation. It gives a better understanding of what it is and enriches what we're creating.
Yes, question.
Okay, so I noticed that you all went to San Luis Obispo. Someone like me, I'm planning on going to Pomona. I'm noticing San Luis Obispo is kind of, I think it's like up in Sacramento area or somewhere around there.
It's closer.
Closer. So yeah. This, from what I've noticed, that San Luis Obispo is more, there's not much to do in a sense. El Pomona, there's a lot of inspiration to see with it being in LA and such. Do you think that should, that's not something I should look at? It's more so the school's better. Do you believe that like Pomona's, like in a sense, Pomona's more design focused and San Luis Obispo is more architectural focused? Which one would you say, like, as a person who wants to go work for a firm, you should go this path or that path? Like, do you see a lot of people coming from Pomona or San Luis Obispo?
So to recap, did that catch on the microphone? Oh, okay.
I think for your first studies of architecture, like at an undergrad, it's important to go to the best school that you're at. I wouldn't necessarily say that, Cal Poly doesn't have anything to do around it, or, you know, LA being in Pomona, it's closer to LA. I mean, I don't know how many times you're going to get downtown or go see buildings when you're in Pomona, because, you know, honestly, we worked a lot. I mean, we were in studio, we had a lot of work. It was a lot of homework, a lot of tests. Our design classes where we're actually like designing buildings and learning all the principles, we were, it was, what is it, 3 days a week for 4 or 5 hours, and then we were expected to kind of develop projects throughout the week, so we were still there maybe another 4 or 5 hours every day after night on the weekends. It didn't really give us a lot of time. Like, what would help though is if you take classes with professors that travel. So I went to LA twice, San Francisco twice. You know, some schools go to New York, some schools go around. I mean, San Luis Obispo is only, 3 hours away, so it's not too far away. And then it's actually even closer to San Francisco. It's only 2.5 hours, 3 hours from San Francisco, which is good to get the diversity in the type of cities. And then one thing that I learned, I mean, you made the comment of, you know, do you go to a certain school to go to a specific firm? Like, if you really want to go to an LA firm, you have to go to Pomona. That's not necessarily the case, I wouldn't say. Something that I learned was going to graduate school was actually more true to that. So architecture for undergrad, I wanted a great education, learn the basics, go to a top school. So then that was recognized, you know, your portfolio, what you have to submit for a job was good and strong. But then when I went to graduate school is when I learned you need to really figure out who the professors were, who you wanted to work with. Like, that's the professor of a top firm, that's a professor really strong in design, this one's this, this one's that. You take their classes, you learn from them, and that's actually one of the reasons why I ended up in LA, was because the professor at my school, I ended up working with them. So it was almost like an internship. You learned a lot, but you were actually working one-on-one with someone and getting their feedback and developing that relationship, which can also happen in undergrad, but it was more of like an experience in graduate school.
Another question?
Yeah, what aspects of architecture do you guys like least?
Do we like?
Least.
To repeat the question, what aspects of architecture do you like least?
Well, sometimes in architecture you feel trapped, so it's important that while you're working you tell the people in charge what it is that you want to do. So you might live your whole life in architecture hating it and never leaving it because you never told anyone where you wanted to go or where you wanted to end up. So that would be one of the things that you like the least, the fact that sometimes you might feel trapped, but again, it's your job to free yourself, to tell people what you want to do, or to, you know, feel things around, see what makes you comfortable within architecture. You have to deal with people, and I think architects are mostly introverts. That makes it very difficult. The people that we deal with in construction are the total opposite of what architects are, which are contractors. And even within the field, you deal with all kinds of personalities. So that would be the other part, just I guess being tolerant is difficult often.
The aspects that I like least, I guess it would be, I don't know, and it's hard to think of a specific time, but when am I the most, working with Paul, I like least, I'm joking. I think when it's slow, when there isn't a lot of work to do, and which happens in the profession. You know, sometimes the client is waiting on money or whatever reason, things kind of slow down some days at work, and you're just there and just waiting for something or just trying to figure out. You end up cleaning your desktop and your folder. I hate that. It's like it makes me want to think like, oh no, am I gonna lose my job? You know, like just have to stop thinking about that. And then the other part that I don't like so much, but it's gonna happen. It happens all the time. It's like either when clients change their mind and you're like gotta redo it, and it's kind of like there's a lot of redoing of things, or because there's a lot of changes. So sometimes it becomes kind of painful where you're like, I just did it one way and now we have to do it all over again a different way. And it's kind of not the best part, but you know, if you like that kind of change, you know, things changing all the time, then maybe it's exciting for you, but not for me.
Yeah, it's part of the process of design is changing at the last minute. So I guess one thing I hate least are deadlines, because we do change things a lot at the last minute. We get a lot of, you know, it's a schedule. Someone wants a product at the end of it. You know, we're a service and we provide, you know, an end thing. It doesn't go on forever. So deadlines are tough and they're stressful because you want to produce something that's so perfect and that you only have one shot for the most part. And if you're a perfectionist or know something's wrong or know something needs to be moved over, you kind of have to let it go to focus on something bigger. So it's horrible to have in the back of your mind everything that you know is wrong, but you know that can be fixed maybe or addressed later, but then you have to produce something. So that's kind of tough. And then, you know, yeah, architecture isn't always, you know, there's a job isn't always like you're not the happiest all the time. Like, you know, people say, oh, do what you love, it's great. You know, some days you're just not gonna feel it. You're not gonna be happy at your job. You're not gonna feel good at your work. But if this is your career and this is what you wanna do, you kind of have to, you know, pull yourself up, get through it, clean your desktop a couple of days, you know, check emails for a long time. And then the next day you feel a little better and then you have a great project in your hands and you're having fun. So it's kind of just going through it all is a little tough.
Would you say the architecture degree is like an expendable degree, or you know it's a different job option, so it's a graphic design and such?
Oh. Sorry, can you repeat the question? Yeah, so I think architecture is a great degree because you can go and do whatever the hell you want afterwards. Like, you know, you could do, what is that, theater sets, or what do you call those things?
Production?
Yeah, like setups for movies or theaters. You could do graphic design. You could do, and even within while you're studying architecture, you get the chance, hopefully, to study other things, get a minor here and there, a couple of minors or something. So architecture is not an expendable degree. I would say that it's the opposite of. It's a very valuable degree because you can go on and do a lot of other things. I think not so much in this country, but in other countries, an architecture degree is considered superior to many other degrees, equal to being a lawyer. And you can pretty much do whatever you want afterwards. You can be a professor, you know, like you were one, right?
For like
a yeah. day. Yeah, for a day or two. You know, you could quit everything and, I don't know, become a garbage man. Who knows, you know, it prepares you for everything. It really makes you, I don't know how to word it, kind of be aware of all the problems that are revolving around you.
Yeah.
So you can do anything.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to add that you can also be a musician, because we've met architects who were musicians or that were singers that had an album member of Farfies.
Oh yeah, it's an album.
Oh, they haven't. Yeah. So I was just going to emphasize that the education is amazing. Like architecture, when I was told that Cal Poly is like very rigorous, a lot of people drop out, it kind of just drove me to like, I'm going to finish. But doing the whole education, you learn to experiment with so many different things that, yeah, you can easily fall in love with photography, with, you know, landscape architecture, with theater. I took a theater class. I took music classes. I mean, it's, and you can apply all that into your work and your profession, which is, education, we could just go off and like say it's wonderful. There was three questions here.
Let's go more deeper. My question had to do with construction project management, because they had mentioned architecture and like
if you're interested in either of them, what would be the difference between them?
Cool. Great question.
Well, I majored in construction management. I was in that thing for 3 years, and it really helped me a lot in terms of my current job and in the rest of my architecture degree. So the difference would be that construction management is like the last word of it says, it's more managerial. So you manage a lot of cost, really, you know, because every material that you put into a building costs something. And you need to figure out how to calculate everything. Like, I remember taking a class of figuring out how many cubic feet you take out of the earth, and you can never replace that amount of cubic feet because it expands, so you can never restore it to its original state. So a lot of weird math like that, a lot of charts. So that would be the difference. I took, as part of construction management, I had to take business law, which was pretty awesome for me. I enjoyed that. I had to take statistics as well. So things that are completely off of architecture, but interesting. So I don't know if I answered the question of what the difference is.
So you began your undergrad in architecture, and then you went to construction?
No, the other way around. I started in construction management, and then I switched out of it into architecture. But then, because of that, I ended up working, my specialty in architecture became construction administration for a period, which is a phase in architecture in which you are supervising the construction of the building. And it still kind of is, I'm beginning that right now in my current project.
But a construction manager more deals with, like, well, you're in construction administration, but I would think that, like, an architect, kind of, they're the ones that design the building. They kind of put it together. They work with the engineers, the mechanical, structural, landscape architects. They're kind of, like I said, the director of the whole thing. And then they get a pack of drawings together and documents, and they submit it to the building department and give it to the owner and said, here's your building. You know, it's approved. Find someone to build it. And that's kind of like the construction manager's job, right? Is to kind of put together, they can work with us as well as architects, but then they kind of put that team together that builds it and deals with a lot of, like Omar was saying, the number crunching, trying to figure out how to save money, because, you know, the owner typically has a budget and they want to stay on budget. You know, sometimes architects do a good job, sometimes they don't. So it's, you know, it's kind of, we work with them, and the phase that he's working on now and I'm working on now is we work closely with the manager and the contractor to kind of make sure that our vision is implemented and done well on budget and can actually physically be built with them. Right? I mean, that's,
yeah.
I mean, the construction manager doesn't necessarily design a building.
No, they never do.
Yeah. They can work they can work with architects, yeah, to design a building. That's a different type of firm, like construction manager and an architect kind of in the same firm. But architects design, and then they oversee construction, kind of like making sure the stuff's built how they wanted it to be, but the construction manager kind of takes over and builds the actual project.
There is a question over here as well. Yeah. Because you mentioned that you like science and art, they told you to go into architecture. So I just want to ask, how did you incorporate those two things into your career? Since you also said that you incorporate a lot of different things into it, as well as like theater, like all the classes that you took, all those experiences, how do you incorporate it into your career?
So her question was, how do I incorporate some of the aspects that I had brought in from like high school, like science and math and art, and that I was interested in theater. I took theater in high school too. It's at least at the office I'm at now, I feel like there are a lot of things that I can incorporate, like art and theater, because our office designs some museums. But even in, I guess just to be more specific, even like in picking a certain color or designing a light fixture, it feels like it's a little bit of a science and an art, because you have to kind of, you know, there's a problem, how is this going to work? You got to do a little research and you discover, you know, how things are put together. So there's a little bit of that science, the theater part, because I haven't really worked in projects that are theater, any of the theater projects in our office. I guess it's more about role playing. No, I don't know. I'm just stretching that answer. I haven't really dealt with theater. A lot of the things that I ended up doing in high school that I loved I feel like I apply in my profession maybe 60% of the time, because I end up doing all the artistic things on my free time. You know, I involve in other creative things on my free time, and work is like 50% creative and the other percent, you know, it's very technical and there's a lot of people management. So I feel like had I not done all those things, you know, learned to love science or love biology or art or theater, I think had I not learned that, I would have not had all of the cultural experiences that I've been having growing up. You know, I'm interested in traveling and seeing things, and I think that then pulls me back into the profession. That then gives me inspiration to maybe suggest something or to solve a problem a different way. So it's related, but in a convoluted way.
We had a question?
Yeah. What is the job market like right now? Are there a lot of jobs out there? Do you have to go with a firm? Can you
freelance?
Are you able to open your own firm? What's the market
can
like?
Can you freelance?
It's the job market right now. I'm just thinking, looking out the window or looking out where we live around this area, there's a lot of construction. I mean, there's a lot of work and there's probably a lot of offices with a lot of people making the drawings and doing the work. I think we're in a good moment right now. I think there are a lot of job opportunities in a big city. I can't speak for the rest of the country or the rest of the state. I don't know if, you know, things are booming in other places. Can you freelance? We've considered, my husband and I considered trying to start our own office, but a lot of it is because you need that kind of first project to kind of get you funded to do the work. And it was always kind of challenging for both of us because we're not like super social people. We're not out there. Like, so it's a little bit of like, if you're comfortable, you know, if you have family who like wants you to do their house or something, then you kind of get a start on that. But yes, you can freelance. I mean, I think you would probably just start doing your like little remodels, and I think that's a good start. I know a lot of people who have their own little offices in around the LA area. I don't know. I haven't kept up with the job market since I'm not applying anywhere.
Yeah, well, it's really good right now, but our architecture is very vulnerable to the economy. So I would encourage anyone who goes into architecture to specialize in something within, once you know you get going with your career. You know, like, the two people next to me are specialists in digital project and CATIA. Okay. You're a specialist in crazy Kirby pokey architecture, which, you know, comes in handy sometimes. For example, in the middle of the recession, Elizabeth and I fled to Mexico City. And that was great. So be open to crazy opportunities when things get bad. And try to find a focus, because specialists are always necessary, even in the worst of economic times.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the business is really big right now. It's very good. There's a lot of money. People are allowing, like, you know, other countries to invest in projects. We have a couple of projects actually downtown that our office is working on that have been in flux for like 10, 15 years, because there's a lot of money when the project starts, and then the recession happened, you know, like 8 years ago. And then that money went away, so the project got to have put on hold. So our office actually went from, let's say, 200 people to 100 people over the course of a year. So architecture typically feels it first, and we're like one of the last professions to kind of come back. And with that said, all the fields of architecture, engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, are with us. So, you know, it's not like a doctor who is, you know, you always need someone to fix someone who has a heart attack. You always need an architect, but sometimes people just need them a little less during the slow times. But freelancing, having your own firm like that, it's limited on what you can do. You know, you have to be a licensed architect, a professional, go through a bunch of other type of testing, and be certified from California in order to become an official architect, to call yourself an architect, and then you can design skyscrapers, anything. But if you're not licensed, you can design maybe small homes, garages, you know, small cafes. So you're limited in what you can do unless you have an actual architectural license.
Is that an extra expense?
The license?
Yeah.
It, Yeah, it is. There's multiple exams. I can't remember how many there are. And they're
six now.
They're not cheap. And then California has its own exam. This is specific to California. I mean, there's different requirements all over the world. So depending on where you want to be an architect, check the requirements. But yeah, the exams are expensive, especially if you fail, because then you have to retake them and repay. Study materials are super expensive.
Some firms have study materials in the office, like ours does, so that was nice.
Yeah, and then once you become an architect, then the renewal fee for the license is $300 every 2 years. Hopefully your office pays for it. Mine pays for mine, so I just get it reimbursed. I think that's it. Also, well, check with the state. So the state of California doesn't require that you go to school to become an architect. You can do it through experience. So, you know, if you want to go that path, you know, research it, and you could essentially be an intern for multiple years and get your experience signed off by somebody, and then you can be an architect.
Yeah.
Great. We have only about 4 more minutes, so I see one more question. Go ahead.
Albert has a very serious performance problem. Why do we see so few defects in the 3D printing hospital?
The question was about the homeless in Los Angeles and about prefabs and prefabricated 3D houses that some other countries do have. Any thoughts?
Well, with LA in particular, and even in California, there's a lot of regulations for housing, so it's very difficult to kind of make that happen fast. So, you know, it's more about the process and trying to find land and then find someone who can actually design the project. And then with 3D fabricated housing or prefabricated housing, I think it's actually being used a lot more now in California, in Los Angeles, but it still takes a while to kind of get that homes. I think the one on Fifth Street, the one by Michael Moulton, is partly prefabricated. So basically his office had someone who was very familiar with the process of integrating with the state and the city of Los Angeles, almost at a political level. This is some of the things that they don't teach you in architecture school, is that, you know, you have to talk with people, you have to fill out grants, you have to fill out applications for certain specific types of housing, and they had someone that specialized in it. You know, go back to what Omar said, that actually made them very particular to that type of architecture, and they can do it. They knew that process. And then with working with the city and the state and the national government, since this is like a homelessness crisis, you can't just build a house and give it away to somebody. There's a lot of regulations, so you have to go through that. So it just takes time.
One last question. The U.S. professor has invented a machine for large scale 3D printing, but I haven't seen anything in real world.
That's a very good question. I guess I want to say that, at least for myself, I don't have complete, I'm only talking because I don't have an answer. Because a lot of what we deal with is there's a lot of legislation, there's a lot of, you know, politics to it, and
I mean,
materials or whatnot. I mean, architecture is not just the design. We have an idea, we're going to go put it out there. I mean, there's money involved, there's developers, there's, you know, city councils, there's, you know, not in my backyard type of thing. So there's so many politics involved with it that a lot of the times that we have minimal control as architects. I mean, some of these questions are probably best if there was like a, you know, the governor here or the city mayor or someone who can, who knows who, where things can get pushed for things to happen. I mean, we're kind of on the tail end of the work. So, I mean, we'd love to solve every problem, which is one thing about our education. You know, we're taught about environmental science in terms of like controlling the building so they don't pull, you know, they don't waste a lot of energy using recycled materials. And we become very utopic and idealists. But when you go out to the real world, you know, it's the developers, it's the politicians that we have to deal with, and it's a lot of setbacks. So it's, I mean, all good questions, and I wish we could solve them, but we can't.
Yeah, and in terms of like new technologies, like 3D printed building materials and things like that, you were talking about the USC professor who developed a machine. there is a lot of testing and a lot of, you know, we have to make sure that it works in all conditions, especially like in California. A lot of the 3D printing technologies, I think they use concrete and they kind of 3D print with concrete. We have to make sure that that can stand up in an earthquake and doesn't burn down and doesn't kill people. So it takes years. So you see it done in a lot of other countries, maybe like in disaster relief or, you know, in other areas, because it's quicker, they don't have as many rules, and also they're able to test it out there. That's part of that testing process. So eventually it'll come. They do have some 3D technology that they use to print, and you know, in the field, it's expensive right now, but the more it advances, the cheaper it'll become, the more widely used it'll become, and the more acceptable it will be in the testing. So there's a lot of steps to go through, and that's just even one part of architecture, like Elizabeth was saying. It's very tough.
We are done, but I have just one quick question. What is your very favorite project that you've worked on that perhaps we can see?
Or Google.
That I've worked on. Goodness.
That's built? Or
that's, yeah, that's...
Either.
To go visit or Google?
Yeah.
Well... I can't work. There's so many. Should I just pass it on? Because I might need more time to think. I don't know. I think the one project that I haven't visited, but I've worked on and is built, and I recall it being kind of my first project that I felt that I was working on something really big and very interesting. It's the Louis Vuitton Museum in Paris. It looks kind of like a katydid, and there's like these wings that looks kind of like see-through. If you just Google it, Louis Vuitton Museum in Paris, it's in one of the parks. It's just... I remember working on it, and I haven't seen it in real life. And I think recalling now, that might have been like, I knew I was working on something very big and important, but I was so young, I just kind of brushed it off. And so that's the memory I have. But it's exciting, so Google it.
Okay, for me, mine is based on location and the precedent. So it's the Museo Amparo in Puebla. And I'm picking that one because it's built and because the previous architect that intervened in this historic building was Pedro Ramirez Vazquez, which is on the front cover of the flyer. He did that concrete thing. My favorite architect. And then I was working for Enrique Norton at the time in Mexico City, and he came and intervened, and I didn't see the project finished, but my friends have sent me pictures. So yeah, that's it.
I was going to say the Louis Vuitton Foundation in Paris, but since Elizabeth took that from me, this is going to sound really dumb. It's a gas station in Pismo Beach. It's off the freeway. And the reason why I like it, I mean, it was one of my first projects that I got to see built. It was working with a small firm in San Luis Obispo that actually specialized in gas stations. But I can go there. Everyone goes there because it's like the gas station off the freeway, and there's a Jack in the Box. I can get a, you know, frosty treat. And it sounds dumb, but it was something, because gas stations have a very specific design, and we were actually able to talk with the owner and get them to spend more money on the design and do stupid things like remove the ceiling and expose the structure and not have a tile floor but have it be a concrete floor. And it saved money for them in the end, what we did, but it's, you know, it's just a space that I can go and say I worked on this, and everyone can go visit it. It's nothing fancy. It's a gas station. It looks kind of cool. It's a big white building off the freeway. But
well, thank you all so much for agreeing and joining us for the career conversation. That was excellent. And thank you all, audience members. Let's thank our guests for joining us. And we hope to see you on the 7th for career conversations with television writers. Thank you.